Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a group of ocean experts have been helping a baby dugong survive off the southern coast of Thailand. Dugongs are large ocean mammals. The experts named the baby Miriam. She has developed an attachment to humans since her accidental separation from her mother. The experts hope Miriam will soon be able to survive on her own. Miriam is about 5 months old. She has become popular on social media in Thailand since images spread of the biologist feeding her milk and seagrass. The dugong is a kind of sea mammal similar to the American manatee and can grow to about 3.4 meters in length. The nonprofit group International Union for the Conservation of Nature lists dugongs as vulnerable. Miriam was found alone near a beach on Koh Phoda Island in April 2019. Officials later tried to release her into a dugong habitat near the coast of another island, but she swam away. Veterinarians and volunteers go in boats each day to find Miriam near the dugong habitat off Koh Libong Island. She does not swim with the dugong group. Usually, she goes immediately to the boats, then follows them to shallower water. There, the experts feed her as many as 15 times a day. They give her milk and seagrass, similar to her natural diet. The experts also examine her health. Miriam's caregivers think the animal has formed a bond with humans. The experts also think she likes the shape of the bottom of the boats, possibly seeing them as a mother substitute. Nantarika Chansu is director of the Aquatic Animal Research Center of Chulalongkorn University's Faculty of Veterinarian Science. She advises Miriam's caregivers. She said Miriam is emotionally attached to her caregivers and always swims close to and stays with the boat as if it was her mother. She added that when the vets are swimming, Miriam goes under their arms as if she would with her mother. Miriam is now famous on social media, and images of her bonding with her human friends have been widely shared by Thai media agencies. Crowds of people now also visit Libong Island to watch her feedings. The veterinarians say they need to continue caring for Miriam for at least another year until she can be weaned from milk. After that, they hope she will be able to care for herself without their help. Nantarika said dugongs typically stop drinking milk at around 18 months and usually spend around 8 years under their mother's care. She said Miriam will have to be trained later to live without help from humans. But at this point, all attention must go toward her survival.
Hundreds of small-town newspapers across the United States have been forced to close down. But the Berkshire Eagle has been revived. The Western Massachusetts Daily newspaper has added employees to its investigative team. It has new 12 pages of lifestyle information. It reports on the area's new eating places. And its advisory board includes famous musician Yo-Yo Ma and prize-winning writer Elizabeth Colbert. 3 years ago, four investors with a lot of money and ties to the area saw an opportunity. They bought the Berkshire Eagle and three newspapers in nearby Vermont from Digital Media First, a large media company. It had become known for destroying small newspapers by cutting costs and dismissing reporters. The investors hired 50 new reporters for the four newspapers, and readers are returning. The long-term success of the newspapers is not guaranteed, but the new owners and employees are working hard to bring high-quality local journalism to their community. I want our newspaper to love its readers, and I want its readers to love the newspapers back, said Kevin Moran, executive editor of the Berkshire Eagle. Frederick Rutberg is one of the Eagle's investors. He was a judge nearing retirement when he pulled together the team of investors in the spring of 2016. Now he is the Eagle's owner, publisher, and president. In the 3 years under his ownership, the newspaper has won awards for its investigative reporting of a local museum's art sale, the struggle to bring internet connection to the area, and the poor condition of the area's bridges. Rutberg often travels to Vermont to visit the other newspapers, too. He also looks for different ways to make money, such as putting on paid events that bring experts to discuss national and international issues. The local Miller family owned the Berkshire Eagle for more than 100 years, but they took on too much debt and decided to sell the paper to Digital Media First in 1995. Rutberg and his three partners returned the newspaper to community ownership for the first time since the sale. They quickly made changes, such as buying better quality paper and adding employee positions. Rutberg and his partners wanted world-class arts and culture information for local readers. Today, features editor Lindsay Hollenbaugh has seven employees. Her reporters have written recent stories about a theater rehearsal with Hollywood actor John Hamm. They have followed around a pizza delivery worker on the coldest night of the year, and they have explained how on-duty firemen get and cook their food. "We feel like we won the lottery," said Hollenbaugh. I'm Susan Shand.
Dog lovers are well aware of the ability of a dog to communicate with its eyes. Now, scientific research suggests this ability developed over time as dogs learned to live with humans. Just like humans, the eyes can be one of the most appealing things about dogs. The animal's known in many cultures as man's best friend. But a new study found evidence that dogs developed in physical ways to present puppy dog eyes as a way to help connect with humans. Researchers in Britain and the United States did the study. Results were published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The study compared the facial muscles of dogs and wolves, which share ancestral history. Dogs broke off from wolves after being domesticated about 33,000 years ago. During that time, dogs changed physically and behaviorally to fit life with humans. The researchers examined the heads of 6 dogs and 2 wolves for comparison. They found the facial structure of both animals was mostly very similar. But one major difference was found above the eyes. The dogs were found to have 2 well-formed muscles around the eye that were not present in the wolves. These small muscles permit dogs to intensely raise their inner eyebrow, the study found. Anne Burroughs is a professor at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She was a lead researcher on the study. You don't typically see such muscle differences in species that are closely related, she told the Associated Press. Comparative psychologist Julianne Kaminsky from Britain's University of Portsmouth led the research. The team suggests this eyebrow-raising movement causes a nurturing feeling in humans because it makes the dog's eyes appear larger. This expression also makes the dog look more like a human baby. The eye movement is similar to that which humans make when they are sad, the statement said. The evidence is compelling that dogs developed a muscle to raise the inner eyebrow after they were domesticated from wolves, Kaminsky said. In a separate part of the study, the researchers observed how 27 dogs and 9 wolves interacted with a human. We also studied dogs' and wolves' behavior, and when exposed to a human for 2 minutes, dogs raised their inner eyebrows more and at higher intensities than wolves, Kaminsky said. The researchers suggest that the eye movements developed over time as a way for dogs to get humans to do things for them. This could involve humans giving them food, care, or attention. Brian Hare from America's Duke University edited the study. He called the findings profound for showing that these muscles likely developed to help in their interactions with people. The proof has been in their puppy dog eyes all this time, Hare said. The only dog species in the study that did not have the muscles was the Siberian Husky, which is an ancient kind. The Husky could be the best living example of what the link between dogs and wolves looked like. Anne Burroughs said the main limitation of the study was the small number of dogs and wolves used. This means further study will be required and should include other ancient dog breeds. The work could also be extended to other animals with which humans have developed close relationships, including horses and cats, Burroughs said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about life in the United States during the 1960s. The 1960s began with the election of the first president born in the 20th century, John Kennedy. For many Americans, the young president represented a spirit of hope for the nation. When Kennedy was murdered in 1963, many felt that their hopes died too. This was especially true of young people and members and supporters of minority groups. A time of innocence and hope soon began to look like a time of anger and violence. Many Americans protested to demand an end to the unfair treatment of black citizens. Many more protested to demand an end to the war in Vietnam. And many protested to demand full equality for women. By the middle of the 1960s, it had become almost impossible for President Lyndon Johnson to leave the White House without facing protesters against the war in Vietnam. In March of 1968, Johnson announced that he would not seek another term in office. In addition to President Kennedy, two other influential Americans were murdered during the 1960s. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot in Memphis, Tennessee in 1968. Several weeks later, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother, was shot in Los Angeles, California. He was campaigning to win his party's nomination for president. The two murders resulted in riots in cities across the country. The unrest and violence affected many young Americans. The effect seemed especially bad because of the time in which they had grown up. By the middle 1950s, most of their parents had jobs that paid well. They expressed satisfaction with their lives. They taught their children what were called middle-class values. These included a belief in God, hard work, and service to their country. Later, many young Americans began to question these beliefs. They felt that their parents' values were not enough to help them deal with the social and racial difficulties of the 1960s. They rebelled by letting their hair grow long and by wearing unusual clothing. Their dissatisfaction was strongly expressed in music. Rock and roll music had become very popular in America in the 1950s. Some people, however, did not approve of it. They thought it was too sexual. These people disliked the rock and roll of the 1960s even more. They found the words especially unpleasant. The musicians themselves thought the words were extremely important. As singer and songwriter Bob Dylan said, "There would be no music without the words." Bob Dylan produced many songs of social protest. He wrote anti-war songs before the war in Vietnam became a violent issue in the United States. One was called Blowin' in the Wind.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
In addition to songs of social protest, rock and roll music continued to be popular in America during the 1960s. The most popular group, however, was not American, it was British, the Beatles, four rock and roll musicians from Liverpool. The Beatles' song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, went on sale in the United States at the end of 1963. Within 5 weeks, it was the biggest selling record in the country. Other songs, including some by the Beatles, sounded more revolutionary. They spoke about drugs and sex, although not always openly.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
In the 1960s, do your own thing became a common expression. It meant to do whatever you wanted without feeling guilty. 500,000 young Americans did their own thing at the Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. They gathered at a farm in New York State. They listened to musicians such as Jimi Hendrix and Joan Baez, and to groups like The Who and Jefferson Airplane.
Look what's happening out the street, got a revolution.
Hey,
I'm dancing down the street, got a revolution. Hey, on the people I meet, got a revolution.
Woodstock became a symbol of the young people's rebellion against traditional values. Many young people called themselves hippies. Hippies believed there should be more love and personal freedom in America. In 1967, poet Allen Ginsberg helped lead a gathering of hippies in San Francisco. No one knows exactly how many people considered themselves hippies, but 20,000 attended the gathering. Another leader of the event was Timothy Leary.
Now, energy comes.
He was a former university professor and researcher. Leary urged the crowd in San Francisco to tune in and drop out. This meant they should use drugs and leave school or their job. One drug that was used in the 1960s was lysergic acid diethyl amide, or LSD. LSD causes the brain to see strange, colorful images. It can also cause brain damage.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
Some people say the Beatles' song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, was about LSD.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
As many Americans were listening to songs about drugs and sex, many others were watching television programs with traditional family values. These included The Andy Griffith Show and The Beverly Hillbillies. At the movies, some films captured the rebellious spirit of the times. These included The Graduate and Dr. Strangelove.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack. And so, because of the automated and irrevocable decision-making process which rules out human meddling, the doomsday machine is terrifying, yes, it's simple to understand, and completely credible and convincing.
Gee, I wish we had one of them doomsday machines.
Other films offered escape through spy adventures like the James Bond films. Many Americans refused to tune in and drop out in the 1960s. They took no part in the social revolution. Instead, they continued leading normal lives of work, family, and home. Others, the activists of American society, were busy fighting for peace and racial and social justice.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
Women's groups, for example, were seeking equality with men. They wanted the same chances as men to get a good education and a good job. They also demanded equal pay for equal work. A widely popular book on women in modern America was called The Feminine Mystique. It was written by Betty Friedan and published in 1963. The idea known as the feminine mystique was the traditional idea that women have only one part to play in society. They are to have children and stay at home to raise them. In her book, Ms. Friedan urged women to establish professional lives of their own. In the early 1960s, a committee was appointed to investigate the condition of women. It was led by Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a former First Lady. The committee's findings helped lead to new rules and laws. The 1964 Civil Rights Act guaranteed equal treatment for all groups. This included women. After the law went into effect, however, many activists said it was not being enforced. The National Organization for Women, NOW, was started in an effort to correct the problem. The movement for women's equality was known as the Women's Liberation Movement. Activists were called women's libbers. They called each other sisters. Early activists were usually rich, liberal, white women. Later activists included women of all ages, women of color, rich and poor, educated and uneducated. They acted together to win recognition for the work done by all women in America.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.